Sports with Steve Bick. Enough. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Good Wednesday morning, race fans. Sirius, make it Thursday. I wish it was Wednesday. Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com, and rolling here toward the Alabama weekend, the draw yesterday for the Alabama. We also didn't get a chance yesterday to kind of look ahead to Sunday and the Queen's Plate. Don't forget about the plate on Sunday, 542. We'll certainly touch on this, the draw for that. It came up very good, a very good Queen's Plate. It's got all the things you want in a Queen's Plate, including the Woodbine Oaks winner. Can't run the Queen's Plate without a Woodbine Oaks winner. Moira for Kevin Detard and the Go Sapper Philly, bred by Adina. And there's quite a few others, though. This is not there's 11 of them, and feels like at least half the field eligible. I mean, Moira has raised her game with each of the most recent assignments as a three-year-old, so maybe she just takes it a step further. But it's a competitive Queen's Plate, and, of course, the King Eddie as well, and what do we have? Dan Smartley? What's the other one? The Canadian. We'll talk about that. Saturday. That's Sunday. Saturday, they got a couple of stakes, too. The Catch a Glimpse and the Soaring Free. The Alabama, though, came up as expected. And, in fact, all three stakes in a row on Saturday that culminate with the mile and a quarter test for the three-year-old fillies, and I think this should be fun. I mean, Nest to me, Way the Horse to Beat, the filly to beat, but Secret Oath and Gerrymander and Goddess of Fire, and then Nostalgic, Scratch Cat, Cheese Keen, kind of your pecking order. But it sure feels like everything goes through Nest. And then some. We've got a bunch of things to do on this Thursday morning. And for those looking for speculation and rumor reporting, look elsewhere, because there's nothing happening on these airwaves without any specific reportage by responsible news agencies. That's all. We'll wondering how approach this the way I always approach anything on these lines. There is a story that can be discussed openly. We'll do it again with another visit from Todd Mostoller, who never expected to have to come back so quickly from yesterday's visit. And yesterday was kind of just fun because Todd had, has been running a bunch of horses, and it seemed whenever I get a chance to see him, I love talking to him. Literally 10 minutes after we finished the show, he came back over to me with a wide-eyed, stunned look, and he said, "You're not going to believe this," and proceeded to lay out the phone call he had just received from HISA administrators that had taken Dufresne down from her performance Friday, a $5,200 placement, basically disqualifying the horse because Kendra Carmouche hit her a 10th time by their count. I mean, even the count is speculative, and there's some uncertainty, but we'll talk to Todd and let him explain the conversation, because this is just like we had literally talked to Terry Meeks about this exact topic. It comes to, you know, comes to a head, comes to fruition. Could you imagine? I mean, this was an allowance. Could you imagine if you get that call and you have black type taken away from your filly, your mare? And not only do you lose the purse money, but now you've lost the potential residual value. This is no way to run a railroad, as they say. I'll let Todd. I'm sure he is more sedate. I mean, he was incensed yesterday, and I don't blame him at all. At all, and he'll tell you there's some elements to this that are even more involved, including the fact that the jock, Johnny, was supposed to ride the horse and couldn't get back in time to ride. So Kendrick wasn't his per se. He's not, you know, laying it all at the feet of Kendrick Carmouche, but this is such a can of worms and such a blind alley and just a way to drive people out of the game at the exact moment when we're supposed to be trying to draw people into the game. So we'll have this. I told Todd, come right back on and I mean, it wasn't an hour later from his visit. So we'll hear from him. All right, gonna get you excited about opening day at Remington. You bet, we're gonna looking forward to it, and. Actually, the fact that we're gonna visit with Dale Day, also, you know, who's become a top contest player, made the final table at NHC, and so it makes me think I've got to give the update on last week's beat pick. We're down to 3 weeks left. To get qualified. So you got six, maybe, actually, I can't remember. I think we do Labor Day as well. So you actually have three weekends, but a seventh opportunity on Labor Day to qualify for the September 17th final. That'll send one of you to Vegas for the NHC, and you win the NHC as the beat pick representative. You'll get $1 million bonus. Yeah, so... Come on, got to qualify. In fact, I talked to there's a group of guys that are just off to the left of, you know, when we're broadcasting at the track. As I mentioned yesterday, have to run. I got a Bennington trip and I've got dentist trip. So my afternoon was going to keep me away from the racetrack. The group of guys, they've been playing and. Qualified and got the $10 tour membership. Save $40. If you're not a tour member yet, wait. I mean, if you're not a tour member, play beat pick. Go against me, actually. Pick something else other than what I picked and pick a winner. If you don't think I've got the winner, you pick the winner and you do that, you get to join the tour for $10 instead of $50. That's worth every cent. So I got to get you the stats. I mean, right now, if I had to guess, based on the numbers, and we kind of stymied people this past weekend with particularly the winner at Woodbine. And I thought I was onto something good and ended up running second, third with Avi's Flatter coming back off the layoff. And then there was the Sweet Overload, Candy Overload, Sweet Overload, Candy Overload, who ran great. So I find those two, you know, find two horses at square numbers, and then Secret Reserve ends up winning at I think 10-11 to 1. So it was really a fun race to pick out the Bold Venture. I'm glad we did that. And then in the Groupie Doll, it was Amos with Little Tootsie, and a few more people got Little Tootsie. I think only like 8 or 9 people qualified by picking Secret Reserve. So hopefully you not only picked Secret Reserve, but you bet the race too, because the returns, it was a healthy set of mutuals. I suppose I could do everybody a favor and pick the Alabama as the race on Saturday, right? Well, right with Nest, I'll be surprised if she gets beat, but we'll see. Anyway, this all started because I mentioned Dale Day is going to join us in the second hour. Opening day tomorrow at Remington for the fall meet, and I'm trying to work a way to get out, get back to Oklahoma City this fall for one of, if not the Oklahoma Derby card for something. Haven't been there in way too long. So they've got a great opening day, and the weekend's coming together. But the Governor's Cup kicks off the stakes action tomorrow for the season at Remington. So we'll talk to Dale, and we're going to have a nice steady, I think we're going to regularly feature Remington, which if you haven't, if you haven't played and you haven't followed, it's terrific. The turf, and they've got field size is going to be robust. It should be a very good fall season, late summer, fall season at Remington Park. All right, look for that. Tom Law, in fact, I've got to let me make sure I confirm Tom Law, because I had not earlier, so we'll do that. And Tony, we'll slip a Tony visit in. I'm sure a lot of you, a number of people, seem like they now have caught up with the situation involving Sean Clancy, and Sean is at the very worst, with the barn fire. He's crafted. It's almost like a little novelette. I mean, he's writing these columns, and when they're going to be put together, they're going to be really, really something. I don't know if he'll want to go back and read them or not. I know some people hadn't really heard, and so some, if you hadn't heard about the, the fire and why Sean is not on campus right now, he's hoping to come back, I think, next week. So, we'll talk to Tom. We'll get Rich Eng in. I have been remiss. It's been such a fast moving week that we did not really get a chance to review the West Coast action. The Del Mar Oaks. We'll touch on everything here this first little bit and get you caught up. Before we get to Todd Mostoller, though, let me at least go back to yesterday. I'm running out of patience. I'm either running out of patience or running out of excuses. I don't know what to say. I was live to 4 horses for the early pick 4 and pick 5, and I cannot nail down. I've had a handful, but all small. This one was 350 to 750 for the pick 5. So, 500 to under 1,000 if you hit both. And it's unbelievable. If a horse that I got an inkling for needs to wire, they get caught. It's getting a little annoying, say the least. And it seemed like yesterday, that the turf suddenly, you know, it was okay to be up on the lead. And when we got to the sixth, that legends can't die, and congratulations to George Weaver and the Reeves and Randy Hill and that the whole team. Chris Mara is involved. Legends can't die. Just not only stayed on, but spurted away. And here's funny. Legends can't die. 24, 48 and 2, 112, 135 and 4. And, you know, Mekalop and I used Mekalop and McKillop and Wish Me Home and that Mboite who ran lousy. Actually, the other maker did not run well either, Seal Beach. So, you know, live to four horses and barely got a snag. I knew I was a chicken in a pot off the turn. But Legends Can't Die wires. And then in the nightcap, I'm trying to get out with the DePaula horse, Dixie Cannon, the Brittany Russell. And Dixie Cannon is loafing along 25, 50, 114, and 3. And gets swamped, finishes fourth. So when we need one to... you know, to wire, no good. Then, you know, another one feels like they're going, you know, at a clip that might take its toll, and they get caught, or they wire. It's crazy, just crazy. So, the big story, for me, the big story yesterday was Snap Decision, who could not have looked better and won easier. Just could not have won easier. Went to the lead, and you know, you give Graham Waters credit, and Jack Fisher, give him credit, because they weren't messing around. Just went to the lead and improved their position. They did a priv. They did a Jay Privman. In the end, cantering. I mean, when I say cantering, basically was like just sort of, you know, jogging to the wire under Waters. Just a terrific, terrific performance. I got a couple of great shots of it. You see the pictures I put up on Twitter? It got terrific, I thought. The first time by, I got him. I love when they've got their fronts tucked and their hind are sort of tucked up as well. And then I got one actually with him landing. You see how they're landing with, you know, 1-2, and then the back legs, you know, still tucked up. It's amazing. They're unbelievable. Incredible, incredible athletes. After that, it was also, you know, very formful. And actually, I should mention, he made $3 look good. $3.10. That was about the easiest, you know, $1.10 you were going to make. Quick return easily as well. Confidently handled by Luis Saez. And people loved the Kieran visit. Thanks again to Kieran. That Mama's Gotta Run, she was too tough. Yeah, the Kemba was too tough. Great job by Seth. Seth absolutely tabbing Socially Selective, the Mott 39 Racing Spitester Philly, a very poor Spitester. Socially Selective, absolutely terrific from the rail. I picked him. Picked her second, just because I was rail never great for, you know, first time starters, but everybody was in the same boat, I guess. That Miha kind of just got an experience, the Rachel's Valentina baby, but Socially Selective blasted this field. I didn't check a fig, but this was 6 furlongs, so it had to be pretty good. Won by over 7, and here I'll tell you right away. Casey, actually, you could reach for Todd. But $28 winner for our man Seth. 82 buyer for Spitester, the Spitester Philly. 82. Padma was second, and there was another 6 lengths behind between Padma and Implicated. We told you about Legends Can't Die, and at almost 10 to 1, that pick 5 ended up paying $751. Pick 4 paid $222. You Glow Girl, another logical favorite in that maiden Philly group. Gervin, adding to his winners, second-time starter for Brad Cox and Steve Landers. You know, in that allowance, the eighth, Sunset Louise, I mean, this was only a six-horse field, but this was a tricky, I thought a tricky group, and I did not particularly like Sunset Louise. I thought You Guys Are No Fun was, and you know, Mia Be a Star, I thought those two were, and Caramoga, Sunset Louise was a little further. I didn't think she was that, you know, prominent here. Nice win for Bruce Levine. Always happy. Saw Bruce earlier in the morning. And this is now, you know, she's now 2 for 4, this one. Vince Stanzioni, Tonalist Philly, paid 60 at Timonium as a yearling. So that was nice. And then finally, Dakota Gold, as we mentioned, at 30 cents on the dollar. And Go Big Green ran down the Go Sapper Philly in the nightcap for Amos and Joel Politi. So famous Amos, just rolling along. Now making his way toward 5,000 wins. you know what that must mean? I did not think of it yesterday, but looking at this pedigree, this was did that horse get taken? Yes, she did. Tally Lynch for Norm Rader. Go Big Green, 4-year-old Go Sapper Philly. So I'm going to guess that means, does it, I guess it means he's a Dartmouth man, but could also mean Tulane. I'm going to say Politi went to Dartmouth. That's my speculation. I could text him and ask him. I didn't have to get a text from Todd Mostoller to feel the ire and frustration and confusion and disgust. Literally minutes after we got off the air, and Todd had visited, you know, just to kind of kick the ball around and celebrate the nice Commonwealth New Era runners that have been coming out for him. Does he get a call disqualifying Dufresne from her performance last week? Todd, welcome back.
Hey, Steve, how are you this morning?
Oh, let me tell you, it's Valhalla around here. This industry we love. I haven't even talked about the Ben Liebman conference. We'll probably get to that. I was hoping to have the visit from hold on. Yeah. Anyway, I will come back to that. Todd, I didn't even know what to say when you came back to me yesterday.
Well, it was, you know, I was up there trying to enjoy my day, you know, put a lot of time and effort into the business, and I got that call about 1:30, and you know, I ran back, was going back that direction, saw you there, and just mentioned the call that I got, and to clarify it, I guess technically I need to have a hearing or attend a hearing as the owner at some point. Now, the hearing notice I got last night, it said to be determined, but the hearing notice that was interesting to me was it, and I hadn't watched the replay at that time, and I watched it last night, obviously, but the hearing notice said it appears as though your jockey struck your horse 10 times, which I thought was kind of strange. You know, when you get violations in states, or if you get, you know, it's not a speculative wording on a hearing notice. You know, you violated this rule, and we're going to have a hearing, but it said it appears. So I watched the race last night, and on the NYRA site, and it's interesting, if you watch the race and you watch the head-on, there's no doubt that Carmouche hit the horse 9 times. To me, the 10th strike is is questionable, and it's interesting because the Naira feed actually it stutters a little bit, and I asked you to watch it also, and I don't know if what you were watching, but I was watching on my iPad, it stutters a little bit. So it was interesting. The comment appears as though I don't know if they are watching the same replays and have come to the same conclusion, and the hearing we're going to discuss that, but it's going to be very interesting as far as whether he did in fact, whether it was an aggressive left-handed flag or he hit the horse a 10th time. I guess that's yet to be determined because their wording on their hearing notice even indicated appears. So it's obviously we're all in a new world going through this process. And as I thought about it, Steve, the real disheartening thing or the real troubling thing for me as an owner and, you know, the kind of time that I put into the game and money was that, you know, growing up, raised my kids. I have two daughters, 26 and 23 now, and one of the things I tried to press upon them, it's not what happens in your life. It's how you react to the things that happen. You know, stay cool, work through it, figure it out, try to make the best, and I try to do that in my business also. And the real frustrating part of this for me is I thought all night, what can I do differently? How can I stop this from happening again? And as an owner, and you as an owner, the answer is I don't have an answer yet because there's nothing that I can do. I'm in the ninth today at Saratoga, so what do? Do I go into the paddock and Joel Rosario comes out and, Joel, don't hit this horse 10 times? Even if I say that, I'm still at risk by the actions of somebody else, and I don't. It's frustrating. It's extremely frustrating. You know, I guess the positive of this was she got beat a half length and ran fourth. This would really be an issue had she had she won. And you're talking instead of talking to $5,600, it was a New York bred first level allowance, $95,000 purse. If she had won the race, you know, now you're talking about a major hit. And there's nothing that I, as an owner, can do. The other thing that was frustrating to me in some of the discussions I've had with other people in the industry, it came to my attention that there's in some jurisdictions, when HISA had sent out their letters to the racetracks were supposed to respond with a funding mechanism how they were going to pay their penance, so to speak, for HISA. And I know there's some racetracks that included the jockeys in that funding mechanism. For instance, Remington Park, and it was like a 5% contribution from the jockeys. And HISA had to approve all of these funding proposals from the different racetracks. That was rejected by HISA, that proposal where the jockeys contributed 5%. I think it amounted to $24,000 at Remington Park. Which is interesting to me because now you're rejecting, you didn't approve a funding mechanism where a key player in the industry, you said, no, the jockeys aren't supposed to pay this, but yet I'm in a situation where jockeys can't supposedly contribute to the payment for HISA, but they certainly can take action to negatively impact those of us who are paying. And it's extremely frustrating because, like I said, it's what action can I take to protect myself that this doesn't happen again? And I'd love to hear your thoughts because I have yet to come up with anything.
I don't. I had this exact conversation in part yesterday with Terry Meeks and the Jockeys Guild and, you know, the unfair criticism that they've received and you know the characterization that they've received, and lo and behold, literally an hour and a half later, here's the perfect example of you know how this this murky structure can really poison the well for us all collectively. because it you know, as you say, okay, this is 5,000. It's, you know, it's 2 months worth of training bills. But if it's black type, if it you know, let's say that it's her only placement in a stake, and she gets hurt working out next week, and now her career's over. Who knows what it's cost you, and if you're going to breed to her, and you know what it cost you in lost potential revenues, and this is just a foolhardy approach to a marginal issue. I mean, the whole thing with the sticks actually ends up, you know, that having to be folded in here, because as Terry said yesterday, this is not a stick that, you know, these foam core sticks now they're not raising any welts. They're just a reminder, you know, just an urging. But yet, the counting of the blows is being counted as if they're, you know, still using hickory switches.
Yeah, with the new sticks, the Cush whips, it's more of a sound that it makes. It's not a they're completely different than they were years ago, and you know, we made that adjustment, and it was probably the right thing to do. But it's, again, as an owner that, you know, in my position, I've been trying to figure out, okay, what can I do different? And I don't have an answer. And I've talked to others in the industry. You know, obviously you rock around Saratoga, there's other major players in the industry, and I had conversations with, you know, with some of those individuals, and you know, one of the things that was brought up as well, some owners would say, you know, listen, I don't care how many times you have to hit the horse, I'll pay your fine. So that's why they came up with this number of 10. If there are owners that have that thought process, to me, there's going to be a pattern that's established. You know, if, you know, and there's continual violations, I guess similar to bad drivers. You know, if you're a constant speeder, you have violations, they add up, and ultimately your license is suspended. Well, here's a situation where I've never met Kendrick Carmouche in my life. I wouldn't know him if I ran into him, and unfortunately it appears as though he hit my horse one too many times. I mean, I'm not telling Kendrick Carmouche, I don't care what you do, I'll pay your fine. You know, and if there are those individuals, I think a pattern will establish. The other thing that was frustrating to me is when the HISA stewards called me, they said, "Your jockey." Well, technically, the rider or the jock that we named on my horse was John Velasquez. So that's who engaged services, but unfortunately, Velasquez had to go to Churchill to ride in the, I don't know, the Arlington Million, I don't know what you would call it, or even the Churchill Million, whatever, and couldn't get back in time, so he had to take off his mounts. So at scratch time Friday, we were forced to find another rider. Yeah, so technically, that's not the rider I chose, and I had no problem with you know.
Sure.
I mean, I left it up to Mike Trombetta to find a rider, but technically, that's not the rider I chose. Yes, it was at scratch time, but yeah, there's so many intricacies here. And listen, the big thing is, I don't know what I could have done, what I can do differently moving forward, that this doesn't happen again. Because as owners, we don't have any control. I mean, yes, we can name riders that aren't habitual violators of the rule, but there aren't. I haven't yet to see jockeys that are habitual violators of the rule. And you're at the premier race meet in the country at Saratoga. They're all top riders. They can all really ride. You can't go wrong with who you go with. And they know the rule. But in the heat of battle, he hit my horse one too many times. Appears as though. To me, it's still subjective, because that last one, and I had you watch the video, what were your thoughts?
Yeah.
I mean, you said...
It is tricky. That last, you can easily count the 9. The 10th, basically approaching the wire, if that is the 10th. You know, it's like, you know, Todd, is when you watch a race live and you got a photo finish and you have a certain view of it, or, you know, you're count. I mean, it's different, obviously, because we're counting, you know, arm movements and, you know, you watch the head on is the way to, you know, get the best, you know, the best view of it. But the first time by, I thought, yeah, that's 10. But then they had a kind of a gallop out slow motion. And it's not as clear, so I agree. This is all. I mean, short strokes on a wider issue that has created a problem where there wasn't necessarily one that needed to be. And maybe these are growing pains, Todd. I don't know. Maybe the riders, you know, now are going to. You know, they're going to work harder and have to practice more putting the stick away and hand riding to the wire, or save their crop use for the most late stages. I don't know. But this is a surefire way to drive people out of ownership.
Yeah, and the other thing that's interesting to me is the last alleged strike. Let's call it that, alleged strike occurred. I don't know, I'm going to guess watching, if you kind of model, you have to see the head on, but it was probably 6, 7, maybe 10 yards from the wire. That one strike didn't urge my horse to finish ahead of the fifth place finisher. She got passed right on the wire, as you know, by basically three horses and ran fourth. She was going to run fourth, whether he did that alleged last strike or not. And listen, I don't know if that's the way to look at it, whatever. You know, like you said, it's growing pains, but I'll reiterate, the frustrating thing for owners is going to be we have no ability to make sure it doesn't happen again. It's out of our hands.
Yep.
And to be for our first violation, potentially for a rider that I've never met, I had no criticism of his ride. He gave us, you know, a heck of an effort. To potentially lose, you know, 2 months training fees and come up here and support this meet and basically lose 2 months training fees over something like that. It's, you know, we'll move on, but at the same time, it needs to be seriously looked at, because I'm sure there's going to be other instances that are far more paramount than this one. You know, but we'll see, and we'll ultimately see what happens from a hearing standpoint. I mean, my argument in hearing is going to be, there's no doubt 9, but this 10th one is, to me, it's not definitive. I don't know if they're looking at the same feed or what video they could show me that said, oh, yeah, this is definitely definitive. If it was a baseball, you know, instant replay, could I say it was definitive enough to overturn it either way? No, I can't. And that's just being, you know, 100% honest. But to me, that last strike's not definitive. And to have something like that cost you $5,600, it's, let's just say, it's not immaterial.
So. No, of course it's not. It's not a, you know, how do you explain this? You know, how do you explain it to, you know, the new owners? I'm seeing if we may actually reach for Tony Early, because even though we've touched on it in different ways, I wouldn't mind Tony's take on it as well.
Yeah, so. And I've reached out to other people to watch it, you know, and the other people that I know have been in the game for 30 or 40 years, and yeah, everybody's pretty much in the same boat as you and I are. Yeah, I can't say that it is or it isn't. And maybe the steward, maybe there's a steward, and when I have this, you know, maybe they'll take that into consideration and the right, I don't want to say the right thing, but, you know, it's dealt with in a manner that I believe is equitable for the situation, which right now I do not believe that it is. If it's just going to be point blank, oh, yeah, this is $5,600, thank you very much, DQ, redistribute the purse. It'll be interesting to see. I hate to be the guinea pig, but sometimes that's the way life works. So we'll see how it works out.
Well, I'm anxious to hear the next step, and how that transpires and the mechanics of that. That's also going to be a story as part of this.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be a Zoom telephone. I mean, obviously, if you're in a telephone hearing and you're just giving your side of the story, you're not looking at the same video that they're looking at. So, yeah, it'll be interesting, the mechanics of how they actually hold the hearing and how it's adjudicated and ultimately a decision is reached. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Todd.
There's no apologies. That's what goes on. This is life. We deal with it. We got to figure out, the best mechanisms, and if it makes things better down the road, and there's no need to apologize. It's just try to make the best of a situation, and that's what I'm going to do. That's how I made the decisions in my lifetime, and like I said, tried to encourage my kids to do the same, and we'll figure it out, and hopefully things are better at the end of it, for everybody. So I'll take the,
Yeah, that's true. We'll greater good. The greater good portion of this would be, long term.
Yeah, we shall see. Well, hopefully we'll win a race today, and winning kind of makes less of that stuff somewhat go away.
Well, before Tony joins us, because I want Tony to talk about what it's physically, how jocks are going to have to change their body movement, because it's muscle memory and instinct, so that's going to have to be adjusted. And of course, the guys that had to deal with it last year in Jersey, that couldn't use the stick at all. There is a template and example of limiting the crop use. I mean, for those that didn't have to deal with it up till now, really, they're going to have to make those adjustments. So I mean, this is not, even though Terry Meeks yesterday, suggesting that there's ongoing conversation, it's hard to believe that that they're going to back off of their, this first set of standards, to be honest. Maybe the thing to get adjusted is this concept of taking purses away from owners. I mean, it's just crazy how they're. Anyway, yesterday we should mention, because it did come up as part of the visit, Bulsara with a nice debut, took some dirt and finished fourth, got some experience, and came back okay.
Yeah, I was at the barn this morning. Everything looked good. You watch the head on there. She really hit the gate pretty hard coming out of there, and like you said, she took a lot of dirt. So it was an educational experience, and as we talked yesterday, it's about getting to that point for that first start. We really don't put the screws to them to win that first start. It's, it's a philosophical thing. We're looking to develop a horse. And, she came out of it in good shape. And we'll try to figure out where we're going to go from here. But, I appreciate that. And, to get back on the jockey thing, as an athlete, I played three-sport athlete in high school, and I don't know how, as a jockey, you can. It would be very difficult to count as you're in the competitive environment trying to win races. And I guess that's in the back of your mind. But it's. I can tell you that I wouldn't want to have to do that. And I don't know what the answer is. But when you're in the heat of an athletic competition, your focus and concentration is on one thing, and that's winning, and that's what it should be. So that's. I'm glad I don't have to do that, but it would be a very difficult thing to do, in my opinion. Yeah, but I've never rode a horse, though. I've never been on horseback going 40 miles an hour. But as it pertains to other sports, that would be pretty difficult, in my opinion. But that's kind of where we are, and we'll try to figure out the best course of action.
Well, should also. Also discuss the starter today in the stake, because I actually had you make your money, Todd Mostolder, with us, and we're talking about the disqualification, first and foremost, of Dufresne from her performance the other day. But in the Stallion Series today, I made her. I made. How'd you make your money? The Paula play of the day at 8. I don't think we're going to get 8-1, but boy, looks very live in here.
Yeah, Steve. She's had a successful racing career to this point, but I've always felt that there's more there. I think she's been her own worst enemy at times, as far as losing position and not maintaining position when she gets in amongst horses. So I think there's more there, and we're hopeful that at some point she moves forward and accesses that ability that we think is still in there. I mean, she's been a very nice horse as far as, you know, stakes plays. She was stakes winner and multiple stakes placed. But, you know, we just, and maybe it's just us being hopeful, but I really believe there's more there. And, you know, you take your time with these horses and try to, it's a process. And at some point, hopefully the light bulb goes on and she can, however she needs to dig down and get that extra ability. Hopefully that's today. But we'll see. I was actually very pleased with the conditions of the dirt track, so because they probably didn't look as though they got a lot of rain last night, because we were out to dinner last night and it rained a couple times. It rained pretty hard, and I was concerned about the turf course, but after being there this morning and seeing the condition of both the Oklahoma track and the main track, it doesn't appear they got much rain at all.
No, I mean, it did it both yesterday and today. I mean, we've for the most part dodged the bullet. Ideally, Todd Mosteller, you can dodge the HISA bullet here, the HISA bullet regarding this situation. We're going to get Tony Black in here to talk about the muscle memory and what it's like for jocks, physically to deal with this. It's amazing. It's just crazy that it came up the way it did with you, because it had literally been discussed an hour before with Terry Meeks on yesterday. So, Todd, I will not see you. I would love to be there for the race, but I got to go to Bennington, Vermont, and then to the dentist. So, I'm a healthy scratch today, sort of healthy.
Hopefully, I'm having more fun than you are today.
It shouldn't be bad, actually. This thing, the work is all done on this. That tooth that they replaced because of the Jordan Almond incident. It actually needs to be tightened a little bit. I can feel it sort of rocking around a little in there. So I asked them to check it, and they said, "Oh yeah, this needs to be tightened." They said, "Okay, well, thank you." It's like going back.
Well, best of luck.
Thanks a lot, Todd Mosteller, everybody. Tony Black is going to join us next, and I want Tony to address this from the jock standpoint. From an owner, I mean, I would be beside myself, just beside myself. I mean, to have a placement, let alone a win, even, and then think about, like we said, a stake win. Have that to be disqualified from that because your rider went to and used the cushion stick a tenth time. Some magical manufactured number that is somehow the difference between going into the record books and not. So, incredible. Tony will be on in a minute. That gives us the window to give you the story that I referenced to start the morning. And Tom Law is just hearing from Tom that he's going to push back. And I imagine the reason he's pushing back is the hard news story that I mentioned at the top of the show that I was absolutely not doing anything with until there was a news report. And the news reports are now, or at least the first news report involving the arrest of Chad Brown, CBS 6 Albany, officially the first with the news. This transpired overnight involving a domestic situation. Will apparently appear before a judge this morning. So you can imagine the kind of fallout this and probably not inappropriate backlash that this is going to produce.
And I just wait as the full story is reported. But those that irresponsibly spewed rumors this morning, instead of, but I guess that's the environment we deal with. Everything that, or at least the kernel of of this story was being circulated early this morning at the racetrack and beyond. So this is. It just inexcusable. No other way to describe it. Tony Black joins us. Tony, I thought it would be helpful to have you follow the conversation with Todd Mostoller that found him receiving a call from Heise yesterday that his fourth place finish worth $5,000 and change last week at Saratoga, has been erased because Kendrick Carmouche hit the filly a tenth time. If he had just hit her nine times, Kendrick would have been fined and had the points accumulate towards suspensions. But a tenth time, let's penalize owners, too, the people that are paying the freight to make the show go when it comes to buying horses and paying for their upkeep. This is going to continue to be, at least in the short term, a nightmare scenario. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. This is the most ridiculous, undefensible rule I've ever been subjected to as a jockey, even though I'm a semi-retired jockey. And to penalize owners is totally, totally ridiculous. I mean, there's no sport that has passed rules of this type that I can think of. If you look at any other sport, let's look at the NFL. You know, they have refs out there determining what is fair, what's unfair. Did he lead with his helmet? You know, was it unnecessary roughness? Was it unsportsmanlike? A boxer, a ref in the ring, a boxer determines what is abuse. When a boxer, defending boxer puts his hands down and he ceases to defend himself, and the other boxer, the offensive boxer, keeps beating on him, it's broke up immediately. You know, the NFL, if it's in baseball, they have rules, guidelines that they follow, but it's determined by the ref. It's not a blanket rule all the time that the ref or the umpire is dealing with. It's a subjective opinion at times, and they don't take instinct away from the offensive player. You know, they let him perform as an athlete to an optimum level. You know, in horse racing, your rider, you want him to perform as an athlete combined with the athletic the athleticism of the horse. You want him to do it in a maximum level of competition. You know, you want to get the most forward position with that horse that you can get. And if there is something that is determined as abuse, it will be judged by the authorities watching the race. It'll be judged by the stewards or any authority that watches the race, and that particular thought of abuse will be pointed out immediately to that rider. And the best way to get riders' attentions are suspensions and fines without penalizing owners who put their money up, and the control of what's going on with that horse is totally taken out of their hands and the trainer's hands, put into a jockey's hands. If that jockey fails to follow the rules, you know, you don't penalize the owner for an abuse of a stick. You penalize that rider, because that'll make it sure that he will not do that in the future. I think when they put rules like this forward, they're trying to appease organizations like animal rights activists and organizations of that nature. And you'll never make those people a fan of horse racing. But let's not penalize the fans of horse racing, the spectators. Let's not penalize the people that truly love the sport and try to make a living in the sport. Let's not penalize them by putting blanket rules as stupid as a whip rule in place. And let's let it be judged by the authorities what a jockey's performance is. Don't take instinct and what a rider's purpose is out there, what his job is out there, away from him. If I feel a horse that waving the stick at a horse is getting good response, and smacking him once or twice is getting good response, and I have to do that 10 or 15 times in the last quarter mile of a race, or if the horse is not paying attention in the early stages of the race, tapping him on the shoulder, waving the stick at him, trying to put him in the race, you know, so he can get the best possible form performance and most forward position. If I have to use my stick to encourage and make him understand what I'm doing and what he's supposed to be doing, and I'm doing it in a way that's encouraging him, not abusing him, nobody should be penalized. Like I said, they're just trying to appease and pacify these people that walk around saying our sport's a sport of an abusive to the animal. You're never going to make those people change their mind, and don't penalize me or the people in the sport that are trying to make a living by trying to appease or pacify those people. It won't work.
In terms, Tony, of a rider's instincts, or at least the habits and practice, and maybe take a couple of minutes and distinguish from your, you know, career experience on riders that you know, rely on the stick, you know, perhaps too much, versus some that, you know, rarely use it. I mean, in terms of the collective out there right now, Joel Rosario comes to mind as a guy who rarely calls on stick urge. I mean, you know, that's a part of this discussion. But you know, how difficult is it going to be for a rank and file rider to make this, you know, make this part of their movement without thinking about it, basically, that make this a new instinct if they have to relearn that portion of their mechanics?
Absolutely. You're going to have to relearn that portion of your mechanics. That's a great way of putting it. You've done things in a certain way time and time again over a long period of time. You've been a person that relies on encouraging horses with the use, the showing of the stick, the hitting with the stick, and all of a sudden now you're limiting the amount of times he can use that stick. I mean, we're not out there counting times of using of the stick. We're out there feeling a sensation that you might not be able to always observe and see and feel as the rider feels it. We're out there using our instinct. You know, when it comes to mind, whenever I went against instinct in riding a race and I tried to follow, let's say, a specific order, you know, a ironclad strategy, I usually screwed the race up. You know, you see kids riding races and they're not supposed to be on the lead and they're strangling this horse to keep him off the lead. And they wind up usually taking his run away from him. And that's what, when riders learn, they say, you know, I tried to do a certain thing with this horse, but my instinct said not to do it. It wasn't working. When you immediately can admit that, you usually revert and do the right thing on that horse's back. When you immediately use the stick and you get no response, you know, and then you use your hands and, you know, I've even ride long enough where once in a while I'd nudge them with my heel to my boot and kick them, you know, but you wouldn't even see it. But when you go against what you make a rider go against what he's instinctually feeling, you're going to have riders not getting the optimum performance from their horse, and that's going to penalize, of course, the betting public, and that's going to penalize the owner of that horse. You have to let riders use instinct, and if then his instinct is viewed as abuse, pull him up. You know, like I say, you can always get a rider's attention by fines and suspension. They don't usually work. They always work. You know, there's a warning system if you want to do. Warning, look, if this happens again, we saw you hitting this horse five times after he quit responding. He was dropping back and you're still wailing on him. Man, it would only take a warning and a fine and a suspension to stop that. But to put something out there like saying, well, you can only hit him six times is almost as ridiculous as me saying to a boxer, I'm going to watch this performance. You can only jab, you have to jab three times or four times before you throw a right hook or before you throw a left. You know, you can't take instinct away from the athlete and expect the sport or that rider's performance to thrive. And you can't expect that horse to do his best unless you let riders to use their instinct in certain cases. There are horses that have a competitive nature that you don't even need to use a stick on. And, you know, you can feel that. And the stick has no positive effect. Well, if you see no positive effect and you're the steward and you rode or you watched races, or at least there's somebody that's monitoring the races that rode races and watched races, you know, if you had one, maybe they need to have one more authority put up in the placing in the steward's viewing stand where there's a monitor that strictly monitors use and misuse of the stick. Or maybe the steward can monitor use and misuse of the stick, and hopefully one of them rode somewhere along the line and understands what a use and misuse is. You don't need these stupid rules that are blanket rules that will not, you're saying that this rule is going to fit every scenario out there. There's nine races a day, average of seven horses in a race, and you're going to say this blanket rule fits every race throughout the country, that because eventually if it works, if they're doing it in Jersey, if they're doing it in other racetracks, it's going to be throughout the country. That's the way it goes. And HISA, now it's a organization that's another group of people who, I don't know what their experience is in racing, but they're out there writing rules. And I don't know if they really listened to anybody out there that rode or that trained horses or that rubbed horses or worked on the backside. I don't know if they have any people out there that helps them write these blanket rules. But it's just not going to work. And I hear people saying, yeah, but we'll tweak this along the way. Yeah, maybe by the time you tweak it, you cost somebody a lot of money. On top of that, when you tweak it, once you put a bad rule in place, tweaking it doesn't always work. It's a rule that doesn't need to exist. Not tweak it and make it better. How about let's not have it, and let's just have people up there monitoring the races and determining what abuse or misuse is.
No, I'm concerned only that based on the conversation we had yesterday with Terry Meeks, that they're not gonna change this. It's they're gonna. I mean, maybe they'll change the fining structure. Maybe that's the way. Maybe that's the way to tweak this. But I don't know how much damage you end up doing in the interim. It's a surefire way to push people away from the game.
And they've done that in certain instances. There was a race where before the race was official, they took the horse down. I don't know if they can still do that, but that happened at track in Ohio, I believe it was. I forget the name.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Yeah. I can't think of the name. Belterra. Yeah, Belterra. I can't think. Too many times. I got too many concussions. I forget things. Yeah. But it's along the way, it's going to really hurt. And racing doesn't need to be gut punched right now. And this is just another gut punch. You know, racing needs to thrive and go on and show how interesting it is to the public, how good of a sport it is. We don't advertise a lot of the positives, and I've said this on one other program. We don't advertise the diversity of this sport. It's a diverse sport when it comes to the people that are out there making a living in it. You know, we don't advertise the care of these horses enough. How well cared for they are. We don't advertise all the jobs that racing makes. We don't advertise breeding farms and how they raise these animals, you know? We just don't put it out there enough to the public of what kind of a sport and the humanity of this sport, the diversity of this sport. We don't put it out there enough for people to really hear it, let alone understand it and believe it. You know, if you say something to somebody, you know, they look at you, oh, yeah, sure, they take good care of these animals. If you say something to somebody, these animals are athletes, and guess what? So are jockeys. Oh, you're just sitting there. You don't do nothing. You're on the horse's back just sitting there. We're not even as jockeys, when they view races, given the credit of being an athlete. And I was an athlete in high school, and I know how fit it was you had to be a wrestler. That's a highly stressful athletic event. And guess what? Racing as a jockey is more, if not more, stressful an athletic event, or as much as stressful an athletic event as any sport out there that I ever participated in. And wrestling's a highly physical athletic event, believe me. Being a jockey, if I didn't get fit and I wrestled right through high school I rode my first race at graduation, I thought I was dead fit. I was getting on horses. And you know what? You ride your first few races, you come back huffing and puffing. I've seen kids come back not just huffing and puffing. They actually collapse when they jump down off the horse. But it's a highly stressful athletic event. Not to get off the subject, but don't take instinct away from riders. Monitor what they're doing and make sure that you're monitoring it and you make them understand what is right and what is wrong. What is use of the stick, what is abuse of the stick. But don't put a blanket rule out there. It doesn't fit every scenario. There's, like I said, there's an average field size, I guess there's 7 or 8 horses, you know, and there's, I don't know how many hundreds of races, thousands of races a day that are run. You can't have a blanket rule like that. That it's every scenario out there. It's impossible.
Well, the problem we've got, Tony, is that you know the whole bailiwick of HISA is to try to have uniformity, and so you know that part of it we acknowledge and can. You know, the spirit of having uniform rules we get, but there's. Yes, there's a set of standards that that I think can work. Then there's a set of penalties that can work. Taking purses away from people using this parameter, it's insane. There's no other explanation or way to describe it other than pure insanity to penalize owners. That have zero control, and then what's the? That's even something we didn't discuss with Todd. I mean, I guess he did touch on it. As an owner, we have no control. So what are we going to say? Oh, don't use Kendrick again because he cost me $5,000. This is no way to go about this. But it doesn't matter what anybody says because you know they're dictating and you know pretending that they're taking input and then you know going
well,
from there.
Yeah.
So I don't know how we.
Well, you have to question the organization, HISA itself. You know, and I know it's been under fire in Louisiana and West Virginia. You know, I believe the judge a few weeks ago, he ordered a stay on the HISA rules. I believe it was West Virginia and Louisiana. And right. You know what? By the time we fight him in court, it's going to do so much damage along the way. And, you know, the sad part about it is there are probably certain tracks and managements that really don't care what this rule does to racing because they're supported by casinos. And, you know, some of the tracks, as you see throughout the country, some of them, just some of them, they've raced less days or they've limited racing to the extent where they've promoted casinos and they haven't brought racing along with the promotions. And that happens, you know, where racing becomes the redheaded stepchild to a casino racetrack casino. And it almost fits into some of these managements, maybe. It almost fits into their what they really want to see happen in the world of racing, you know, where it's limited. Because casinos, I guess, are so profitable and maybe easier to run. You don't need a backside full of horses. You just need a parking lot full of cars and people coming in with money in their pocket. So, but it really is wrong to penalize owners. I cannot in any way, because I hit this horse 7 times, see, or 10 times, you know, that a owner should be penalized. Like I said earlier, and you just stated, the control of that event and that horse's performance is totally out of his hands. It's out of the trainer's hands.
Yeah,
it's in this jock's hands. And let's make this jock into a fool, and because now we'll have even the owners and trainers come down on him. But when all of you need is the authorities monitoring the race to come down on him without penalizing the public or without penalizing the owner and the trainer. You just need the authorities monitoring the race to say, hey, son, we saw that. This isn't going to happen again. You know, it's a fine today, it's a suspension the next time, or it's a suspension of so many days today, and there's more days next time we do it. Don't let it happen again.
That's the system, Tony. That is the, you know, the point system and the, you know, the multiple violation system. So that should be enough. But turning around and injuring the owners is just silly. It's just terrible.
Ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You know, I mean, you're doing discredit to the owners, to the trainers, and to the betting public at times. It just can't go. And like I said, I can't say it enough. You can't have a blanket rule that fits every scenario. These horses are individuals. These jocks are thinking individuals. And they're supposed to have a skill level, jockeys, you know, to know what they're doing on that horse's back. And if their skill level is not up to par, you wind up taking the system and utilizing the way it's been used in every other infraction. You know, warnings, fines, suspensions, you know, increased suspensions. You'll change his mentality of that jock by suspension.
Well, and that's exactly what needs to happen if this is going to work. Tony, I appreciate it. Let me, on short notice and reacting to the earlier visit from Todd Mostoller, I appreciate that, and we will talk next week.
Okay, take care. Love you, Steve. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Tony Black, appreciate it. Love you. And there we go. Let's take a break here, a couple minutes into hour two. Going to visit with Dale Day. We're going to kick off the season at Remington Park tomorrow. And nice sequence. Where are my PPs? There we go. The opening day feature, the $175,000 Governor's Cup. They made Brad Cox the favorite, Plainsman, 9-5. I thought that Villafranco, Rated R Superstar, good old Rated R Superstar, 4-1 was okay. And Broberg's got Flash of Mischief, 5-1. It's a good race. There's a 2-year-old filly maiden special that starts the pick five. I take that back. It does not start the pick five. Pick five, I think they do the pick five from the early, races 1-5. But the fifth is a Made the Special for two-year-old fillies and CR Trout. The four, Candy Storm Slough. Asmussen will be the favorite. Watch out now. But 3-1 on Candy Storm Slough. I think I like CR Trout in there. Looking forward to playing some Remington. They love the horse. They the culture of the horse in Oklahoma. It's also a place where the casino has a huge viewing area of the racetrack. They do not try to hide the fact that there's racing going on. Shocked to find that gambling is going on here. Sir, you're winning. Oh, thank you very much. Captain Reno making an appearance today on the show. You know, Louis. So many. You know, everybody focuses on just a couple of lines. There's so many great moments in Casablanca and lines. I'm going to forget her name, but the Rick's love interest early. Where will you be later? I never make plans that far ahead in advance. Where were you last night? So long ago, I can't remember. Dale Day joins us, the voice of Remington Park. When we come back at the races Thursday, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.